knows his ABCs.
Now, there's A, there's B, and crap, it's after B.
See The Andrew Lawton Show on AM 980.
Welcome back to the program. This is Canada's most irreverent talk show, The Andrew Lawton Show on AM 980. Thank you so much for sticking with us through that break here. Now, I had a haircut the other day, and I go to the same barbershop all the time. Great guy, they do it. I pay, you know, I don't know, $16, $17 for it. They cut my hair. Very simple. I don't get a perm, I don't get any color, I don't get any curls, I don't get any other terminology that I'm not yet aware of. I want my hair cut, and that's it. And that's a pretty simple task. I'm sure I could do it myself if I had the equipment. I like that I just sit down and it gets done. Now, I've never questioned the credentials of the men who work at the barbershop at which I frequent. They have some, you know, papers on the wall, and I just assume it's good. My general rule is if I see people leaving and their hair looks kind of decent, I'm like, all right, they're qualified. They can do this. End of transaction. Well, of course, that just seems too simple if you're the government, because the Ontario government has put in new regulations regarding the certification of tradespeople. 300,000 tradespeople province-wide now need to be certified, from electricians to home contractors, and yes, hairstylists, which is a group that includes barbers. So now barbers, even people who are just clipping people's hair and nothing else, need to get certified and take a course that is up to 2,000 hours of work, including practice hours, costs $5,000 to $6,000, and teaches them how to perm and color and bleach, all to work as a barber, even if they've been doing it for 20 years. Joining us now is Paul McKeever, lawyer and leader of the Freedom Party of Ontario. Paul, is this kind of something that should surprise us by now with this government?
Well, you know, this is a long-standing practice for all the parties that are currently in the legislature. We've already got colleges of physicians and surgeons, colleges of, you know, effectively the Law Society is one such college, colleges of nurses and et cetera. All of these so-called colleges are, they're always set up so as to protect the public or to ensure high standards, but the reality of it all is that it's a great big scheme by which people who are currently in the business can keep out newcomers, keep the competition low, drive up prices by way of supply and demand. That's the game. And what this act does is it systematizes it so that if, you're, for example, you're a pastry chef right now or something like that, and you think, hey, I've got a pretty good business, but I've got some newcomers coming along and they're horning in on my business, I'm going to get my trade registered. And then they won't be able to just come in. They'll have to go through training, and there are going to be apprenticeship ratios that keep them out, and we'll be able to keep our prices high. That's the game.
Well, and when it comes down to it, I think it goes back to 1998, I read, that barbers and hairstylers were actually put into the same category. So that seems problematic in itself. But when I look at the list of these trades that require certification, a lot of them, I think, are completely unnecessary because these people have already been trained in their field. We're not talking about rules that keep someone from waking up one day and saying, I'm going to dismantle an atomic bomb. I mean, these are things where people in a lot of cases are being forced to go back and retrain for something they've been doing for years.
Well, you're right. And if you think about it, people, I mean, like you say, I've been getting my hair cut since, you know, I had hair. And I haven't ever said, can I see your qualifications? I've just looked in the mirror and said, yep, you're qualified. You know, and we do the same thing with restaurants all the time, for example. The government even there has its nose in things, but they do so to make sure we're not eating poisonous goods or et cetera. And we see a little chart on the wall and it says green or yellow or red. And, well, red we won't see because the store will be closed, but yellow says, you know, we've got some concerns, and green says, go ahead, everything's safe. Well, you know, the same thing happens with certification. In a sense, there's nothing wrong with the government saying, hey, if you want a certificate that says you've accomplished some degree of proficiency, yeah, we offer that service. Here, you've passed our tests, much like a secondary school diploma. But to say that you need to pass the test in order to provide the service to someone who might not care whether or not you have a certification, that's where they overstep it. That's where the government gets involved in limiting the supply, playing with the numbers. And by the way, these colleges don't just act as guilds. They don't just, you know, protect their own and make sure they don't have any competition. The people who are forced to become members of these things then have to pay in, and we have all heard about training and whatnot that they have to go through, like this poor fellow in the news lately with the perms and curls and all that. But the other thing they do is they get into a whole social agenda where they'll take your money and they'll use it to fund affirmative action programs. For example, are there enough women in the barber profession? Let's assume that they set up a separate category for barbers, but that only men wanted to cut men's hair and shave men's beards. I can tell you, having a beard, my hairdresser hates my beard, and she hates trimming it. I don't think she'd get into the barbering profession if that were a separate category. Well, does that mean that, you know, women are underrepresented and that therefore we have to reserve a certain number of apprenticeship positions for women so that we have equal numbers of men and women doing barbering? I mean, this is the kind of social engineering that these colleges permit, and that's exactly what is done in the more established ones. For example, I get regular updates from the Law Society, of which I'm a member, telling me all the great things they're doing with my money to make sure that there's some kind of representation by somebody according to some genetic code or according to some historical grievance. And that is not protecting the public. That is social engineering.
Well, yeah, I mean, as far as these apprenticeship ratios go, I have to wonder how they get to those numbers, because you would think, and I mean, this may be an out there concept, but you'd think the only determining factor would be, is there someone who wants to hire this person?
That's right. And I mean, they have these, I mean, the absurdity of all of this, okay? I mean, you know, we think there's a debate going on among the parties in the legislature. There's not. They all want the government to have their nose into this. It's just a question whether, you know, like, I guess Hudak doesn't want the college, but he still wants the government to regulate everything. And he wants, for example, a one-to-one ratio. That means you can't, if you're a bricklayer, let's say, supervise two people, to teach two people to lay bricks. No, that would cause an explosion in the number of bricklayers. So he wants a mandatory one-to-one ratio. In other words, he doesn't want any more than one. And this is seen as somehow increasing the number of people in the profession. This is ridiculous. It's like putting a limit on the number of children you're allowed to have. There shouldn't be a ratio. The ratio should be determined by a person's ability to supervise and their resources to supervise the number of people who want to learn. And that's it. If they pass some provincial test because they want to prove that they're certified, that's great. They can say, I've now been certified by the province. But if I want some guy to put a retainer fence in around my yard, just cosmetically, and I don't particularly care whether, you know, the thing's going to be perfectly square or use the latest in anti-dew technology, if I just want a kid to put up a thing, I want to be able to pay him the $20 an hour or whatever he wants to charge for his services without having to put him through some kind of special certification where he has to keep his skills up. Look, I just want a retaining wall. That's it. That's all. Let me pay. And let him provide the service. The state should not be setting up these, effectively, guilds to protect the jobs of people who want to charge above market rates.
Now, and I mean, the context under which we're talking about this now is with tradespeople, but I mean, you as a lawyer have been through your own hurdles with this on a professional level. I mean, have you ever had to go through any of these mandatory courses or training or whatever these things are?
Absolutely. As of about, 2 years ago or three, they made ongoing legal education, so every year I have to take a certain number of hours of courses to supposedly improve my skills, even though my level of expertise is typically much greater than any kind of coursework they give. And the reason is because, you know, everyone's looking for these courses just to satisfy the number of hours. The courses tend to be general and deal with rudiments and not deal with anything very specific and cutting edge. And so you end up spending $2,000 is not an unrealistic figure. Every year, just to say that you spent a certain number of hours in front of a computer screen listening to a bunch of other lawyers talk about things you already know quite well. And this is the same kind of thing that will play itself out right through from hairdressing, you know, a guy with 20 years experience shaving people's faces or cutting their hair is now going to be told how to hold a pair of scissors and rinse them. I mean, this is the kind of stuff they'll pay $300 per course for and probably be forced to take about 6 to 10 courses per year.
And the irony in the legal example you gave is that the lawyers who are teaching you these things are having to go through this as well by other lawyers who have also had to do this annual training. So it seems as though they're just kind of giving this false education.
Well, this is it. And not only that, I mean, let's face it, if you want to be cutting edge at anything, you don't give out the de rigueur, rudiments. That's not where the wins occur. Okay, so what are they doing? They're telling you the basics so that at least you're not doing something incompetently. But if you're already very competent, it's literally a waste of your time. I can't tell you. I think I've blown about 12 hours. So what would that be? I think it's 12 hours per year you're forced to put in. That would mean approximately, it might be 16, but at my rate, probably somewhere in the range of about $2,000 or $3,000 or $4,000 worth of work that I've just had to forego so that somebody else can pretend that they're teaching me something. And this is going to be the same right through. And by the way, you know, we're talking today about barbers having to learn how to do a woman's hairdressing thing. If you look at the College of Trades, in their list of what are called voluntary trades, in other words, they're just the trades like baker, arborist, chef, child worker, etc. They're just waiting for one person or a number of people to say, guess what, I want to turn mine into a compulsory trade. And they've set up a system where it's all, you know, you just put in your application, and a bunch of people who are in your field of endeavor will decide whether or not to basically set up a monopoly for you. It's really insidious. It's going to kill jobs. It's going to ensure that unions get, of course, a bigger share of the pie, because guess who gets to sit on the committees that decide ratios and whether or not something gets to be a guild? This is a really bad system, but getting rid of it isn't enough. I think you have to deal with the essential issue, which is that the government should not be setting ratios. The government should not be setting qualifications as mandatories. I mean, obviously, for things like opening you up on an operating table, you know, they're going to want to make sure that they have certification standards. But that's not the same as saying, you know, you're not allowed to cut hair or make a pastry unless you've got a license, and that you've had to first find somebody who was willing to give you the hours on the job, the apprenticeship hours on the job. And by the way, we've limited that to, you know, 3 journeymen to 1 apprentice, or 1 journeyman to 1 apprentice. My goodness, if you can't teach a room full of people to make an omelet with a single chef, there's something wrong.
Absolutely. Paul McKeever, leader of the Freedom Party of Ontario, thank you so much for your time this afternoon.
Thank you, Andrew.
We have to take a quick break here, taking your calls on this when we come back. 519-643-2222 is the number to call. What do you think about this new initiative where barbers, people that are cutting the hair of men and doing nothing else, need to learn how to perm and style and color just because Kathleen Wynne said so? Taking a break, more in just a few moments. This is the Andrew Lawton Show on AM 980.